Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. Boy, this past week has been quite something, I gotta tell you. Saturday night, Daytona Beach, Riot Pro Wrestling, Anarchy. I wrestled against Jorel Ganzi, and I suffered an injury to my throat. Took a chop. Full blast to the throat. That was not fun. Didn't feel great in the match. Got through the match. That was good. You know, didn't have any issues there. But afterwards, man, it hurt to try to talk, hurt to swallow. So I got myself to the hospital. And luckily for me, just bruising to the area, no damage to the trach or anything like that that would need surgery or anything, or what have you. But yeah, it was not a fun night for me, so that's why I sound a little under the weather. It was even funnier for me because I went to my doctor like Monday, and they thought I was getting over a cold, and I explained to them what happened, and they looked shocked. The nurse was like, "I would have to quit if that happened to me." I was just like, it's part of the game, right? Accidents happen. Mistakes can be made. It is what it is in a sense. But yeah, it has been a challenging week for me. But nonetheless, we are here. We're going to talk a little bit movie news. One piece of news that I am giddy about is the fact that June 6th on Hulu, they will be releasing a animated anthology film called Predator, Killer of Killers. So it's going to be set, you know, in the era of Vikings, a ninja in feudal Japan, a World War II pilot is going to have to fight predators. It looks really good. Dan Trachtenberg directed it and came up with the story with a few other individuals, such as Jim Thomas, John Thomas, Mark Toberoff, Ben Rosenblatt, and John Davis. I guess they're writers and producers. And this looks really good, man. Looks really cool. It's stuff we've been asking for as fans for years, and we're finally getting it. So, especially Japan. Like, I wanted to see the Predator fight in feudal Japan, and we're getting that in animated form. And then, November 7th, Predator Badlands starring Elle Fanning is going to be hitting cinemas. Can't wait for that one either, man. It's a good time to be a fan of the Predator franchise, I gotta tell you. You know, we had a stinker in The Predators. That was Robert Rodriguez. The Predator, Shane Black. That was a bit of a miss. As much as I enjoyed some of the aspects of that film, overall, woof, that, yeah. Not good. Predator 2 has, you know, received praise in later years since its release. You know, a lot of people didn't maybe have seen it at that point when it came out because Schwarzenegger wasn't in the film. But man, these cool projects, Prey was good. I'm sure Killers is going to be really good. Badlands, I'm interested to see how that works out. But yeah, man, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Daredevil Born Again. The Isle of Joy, episode 8. Man, oh boy, they were cooking with that one. So good. You know, Charlie Cox, Matt Murdock, so good, man. It's interesting to see his dynamic with his girlfriend right now because, you know, she's a therapist, she's anti-Daredevil, and he, you know, clearly he is Daredevil, and he's trying to keep the facade up, and she's asking a lot of questions because she's very observant. So, you know, it's that double life trying to figure out how to manage it all, and the revelation he finds out towards the end of the episode. Oh my God, dude, that was pure cinema, man. As the kids say these days, cinema, even though it's a TV show, but nothing, that's neither here nor there. All right, don't fight with me right now. I gotta hurt throat, and I'm just riffing here, all right? We're riffing. But anyway, no, man, like, the scene at the ball with Fisk, Vanessa, Heather, and Murdoch, man, The back and forth with Vanessa and Matt was so good. And just the reaction from Wilson when the moment happens, I don't want to spoil it, but it was pure gold. It was memed a hell of a lot when I saw it this past week on Twitter once that episode aired. But no, it was a good episode, man. Really, really good episode. And next week is going to be the season finale. I'm remembering correctly, I think it's only 9 episodes this season, and season two is already underway with production. There's no tentative release date just yet on that one. But man, this, I said it last week again, but this is really good. I'm not going to get into spoilers. I'm going to wait 2 weeks or 3 weeks after the fact. Once the show's season's done, then I'll get more in depth with it. But yeah, man, it's gearing up to be a real good one. I want to see if they could stick the landing because the show's been pretty good so far. The anti-vigilante task force has been assembled and they're running roughshod and they act with impunity. So that's definitely, planting the seeds for next season. But man, oh man. Can't say enough good things about it, but I can't wait to talk more in depth about it, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. In a bit of funny news that I saw today, Variety reported that James Cameron is changing his stance a bit on AI and thinks that it could be used to cut costs without the need to fire staff. I think that's interesting. I didn't read the article, I'm gonna be honest with you. I just saw the headline, and just on face value, the guy who wrote and directed Terminator is like, yeah, AI is fine. It's like, sir, did you not learn anything from your own work? What are we doing here? What's going on? But AI is here to stay, I guess, for better or for worse. I mean, there's a lot of flaws with it. Obviously, it can't replicate what creativity can do, especially in art. I mean, you see some pictures and like hands got like 7 fingers on it or like 4 toes or whatever. But I don't know, man. I don't think they should use AI at the expense of staff. Like, people deserve work and to get paid, I don't know, you can't really replace a human being. In some aspects of what you're doing, I'm sure they're not like gonna use it to make a full-blown movie and maybe like clean up some CGI. I don't know. But as I click the article, because I'm a crackpot journalist, and I'm not even a journalist, I'm just a guy with a podcast. But he says the goal is to understand the space, to understand what's on the minds of the developers. He explained on the Boz to the Future podcast, what are they targeting? What is their development cycle? How much resources you have to throw at it to create a new model that does a purpose-built thing? And my goal is to try to integrate that into a VFX workflow. It's not just a hypothetical. If we want to continue to see these kinds of movies that I've always loved and that I like to make, and then I will go see Dune Part 2, or one of my films, or big effects heavy, CG heavy films, we've got to figure out how to cut costs in half. Continued on to say, now that's not about laying off half the staff and the effects company. That's about doubling their speed to completion on a given shot. So your cadence is fast and your throughput cycle is faster, and artists get to move on and do other cool things, and then other cool things, right? That's my sort of vision for that. Okay, well, now that I've read a little bit of it and heard his thoughts on it, it makes sense in that regard. Like, you can't really expect AI to, again, change or make up for what a person does as far as creativity goes. But yeah, I guess, like, for rendering and all that other sort of stuff, I don't know a whole lot about VFX. I'm just a guy who went to film school for screenwriting, so what do I know about VFX? But I don't know, man. In that regard, I can see his ideas and how that would be helpful. I mean, dude took like, I don't know, over a decade to make Avatar 2 for the technology to catch up. I mean, I haven't seen it, But no, I don't plan on seeing that movie because, I mean, the first one was just Dances with Wolves and Pocahontas with giant blue people. And that was enough for me. I had no desire to see two. But all right, in that regard, hey, if that helps, if it cuts the cost down and keeps everything budget friendly without the risk of losing quality, sure, why not, right? Have at it. And a little bit of news that I find interesting, the director of Ingrid Goes West is set to direct a Netflix comedy starring John Cena and Eric Andre called Little Brother. Now that is, I mean, I loved Ingrid Goes West. That was a great film. It was a interesting comedy slash, I mean, it was kind of horror. I mean, the girl stalks a girl from across the country and then moves there to try to befriend her. It's a little sick and twisted, but it's pretty funny. Shout out to O'Shea Jackson Jr. He did really good in that movie. I loved him in that. But Spicer will work with a script by Jared Paul and Andrew Mogul, the creators of the Netflix comedy Huge in France. The film centers on a famous real estate agent whose carefully curated world is upended when his eccentric little brother unexpectedly appears. Why do I feel like the little eccentric brother is going to be John Cena and not Eric Andre? I don't know, just a shot in the dark there. But yeah, that sounds like it could be fun. I'm all for John Cena. John Cena has found his lane in comedy. I mean, he did action. I mean, 12 rounds or whatever in the Marine, and those weren't very good. And Peacekeeper is a blend of action and comedy, but like that dude has found his niche when it comes to comedy films and being an actor. And I'm not a big fan of Eric Andre, but I will sit down and watch this possibly. Just out of morbid curiosity to see how that goes. Another movie that came out this past weekend that I gotta see at some point because it's Ryan Coogler directing. I think he co-wrote it too. But Michael B. Jordan is starring in it. Sinners. It's a vampire film. It's a crime drama. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's could be almost In Dusk Till Dawn in that kind of vein, how it mashes genres up. I don't want to call it a carbon copy or like it's blatantly From Dusk Till Dawn because I haven't seen it, but like that's just how it felt within the marketing in a sense. But I so want to see that film, and I know it came out this past weekend, and I know when I do, I will give you guys a review on it because it looks interesting. So, and I hope it lives up to the expectations. And another piece of news that is fascinating to me is that Jon Bernthal has talked about the upcoming Punisher standalone special. He will not only be acting in it, obviously, as Frank Castle, but he'll be a writer on this special. So that'll be fascinating. I mean, I don't know his writing capabilities. I'm anxious to see it because, Frank is a very dark character and he was played to perfection in the Netflix show. But can he, how good is he as a writer? And, I mean, being a star, he's going to have a lot of input, but actually being in the writer's room and coming up with a story. Very, very interesting. This happens a lot, or not a lot, but there are guys like that. I mean, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon were screenwriters that wrote Good Will Hunting, right? Won Oscar for that. He wrote Ben Affleck. When I say he wrote a bit of the town. I think he rewrote some scenes and he directed that as well. He wrote Argo too, or maybe he just directed it. But regardless, he was a writer too. Edward Norton, I know, gets in there a lot and writes scripts and edits his films, which I don't know. That's one thing that fascinates me about Edward Norton is where did he get the clout to just walk in and be like, I'm gonna edit the film the way I want it, or I'm gonna rewrite scenes. Like before he got into Hollywood, he has no writing credits. And I don't think he's had anything that to show that he's a great editor. So I don't. It's that's fa That's a fascinating thing that I would love to know the answer to, or like how he managed to like coerce an entire film studios and everyone just go along with his ideas like that and just be like, all right, yeah, cool. But nonetheless, there's no title for this special yet. I don't think they've even started production on it yet, as far as I can tell, but he's a writer on it. And Jon Bernthal is a great actor, so let's see his writing chops. But I think it'll be good. They say it's supposed to release sometime in 2026. And in between this, he's also, promoting The Accountant 2. He also appears in The Amateur with Rami Malek, so I'm sure he's going to be promoting that soon. He's also filming Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey, as well as promoting his upcoming detective series, His and Her. So that man is very busy, we could tell. So there's that bit of news. Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning is coming out May 23rd. It's interesting because the last movie was called Dead Reckoning Part 1, and they just changed that completely because the box office numbers weren't as high as they anticipated to be, and I thoroughly enjoyed Dead Reckoning. They added a lot of stakes to the film. Ethan Hunt never seems to be, in control of anything. He's just reacting and just getting the shit kicked out of him, and his team is getting dismantled left and right. But this is supposed to be the final one. I'll believe it when I see it, because do franchises really die? You think, I don't know, if the box office is high enough, you don't think that Tom Cruise will be like, all right, I'll do another crazy ass stunt. It's shocking to me that they're teasing this to be the end of the Mission Impossible franchise, at least I guess for Tom Cruise, because again, I'm sure they'll wait 4 or 5 years and reboot it. And it'll end up on Amazon Prime's video or whatever, Netflix, who the hell knows. But yeah, I don't buy it, man. I don't buy that's the last one, but I hope it's as good as Dead Reckoning was. So that'll be fun, I'm sure. And I'm sure I've seen like a few clips from the trailer, and Tom Cruise does the Tom Cruise stuff where he does wacky, crazy stunts that a man his age nor stature as a star should probably be doing. But I guess that's also the appeal of Mission Impossible, because it's like, no, there's no way that they had Tom Cruise doing these stunts. Ghost Protocol, I think, of the one was really good with that, like him walking up that building or climbing up that building side of it and losing the glove and all that. That looked pretty intense, and we know for a fact that Tom Cruise did it. So, I'm sure that'll be a fun ride regardless. The main topic for today, something I've been passionate about for the last week, is a video game called Lost Records: Bloom and Rage. It is produced by the original developers of Life is Strange. This is part of Don't Nod. It's a narrative adventure game. And when I say narrative adventure, for those of you who may not play video games or have any idea what I'm talking about, it's, games where it's heavily dialogue driven, and whatever you pick dictates what happens next in the story, and it changes the trajectory of how you answer things. And however you answer as your character, it changes the trajectory of the story. So this game, Lost Records: Bloom and Rage, centers around four girls in a small town called Velvet Cove. You play as Swan, and she befriends girls named Nora, Autumn, and Kat, and they form a punk rock band called Bloom and Rage. And it's over the summer of '95, and this game has a lot of '90s hallmarks in it. There's a Blockbuster-esque company called Movie Palace. Swan owns a Tamagotchi. There's Goosebumps-like books in the world. Things that kids and, preteens or teens of that era would probably have done or would own and such like that. And to sum this game up, if I had to try to give you like an elevator pitch version of it, it's it meets The Craft meets the Blair Witch Project. And I think that's really interesting. Now, it's a tape, there's two broken into two parts, tape one and tape two. Tape one is called Bloom, tape two is called Rage, and that comes out April 15th, I believe. I can't wait for tape two, but nonetheless, tape one starts out very slow. You know, you got to build up anticipation, you got to meet the girls, you got to figure out their world and how they live before, you know, the big portion of our story is done. But yeah, no, I've enjoyed it so far. Like, I've played it, I've completed it Sunday. I played it almost all day. I stopped for a bit to watch AEW Dynasty, not even gonna lie. But once that was done, I got back and started playing it again. And it's really fun, you know. I've never played Life is Strange. I played sort of similar games like this, like the Telltale Batman series. I played that, and so I had a lot of fun with that. So, and I've heard Life is Strange is really, really good, but this is the one I jumped on because, you know, again, when it's centered around punk rock, I am invested and intrigued to see how that plays out. There's some minor things that I'm not big super into video games to speak about it in a production standpoint, but I will say that for me, there are some bits that are choppy, like overlaying dialogue, but from what they called reminiscing, and then what's actually happening in 95, some of that overlaps. Like, Swan has a camcorder and you videotape things and it's part of little missions you got to do, and she does voiceover work to kind of give more internal thoughts and feelings over that. So that they have narration for that over the videos, but then you also hear fragments of what you actually recorded if there is dialogue being spoken in that, so that kind of muddles it up a little bit. But other than that, story-wise, I'm invested. I've been in suspense wanting to know exactly what happened to the girls that they decided they could no longer be friends, and that why did they have to come back together now? If you're not necessarily into like button mashing and stuff like that, I guess this would be the game for you, or not being too involved. But you got to be focused to listen to the dialogue and see the actions of what you got to do next, or what decision you should make, or what would like to make in like a certain amount of time. New options pop up every so often if you let the dialogue continue, so you could, you know, have a different answer than just A or B. So I thought that was pretty cool. What else is there? Swan is a socially awkward girl. You know, she videotapes everything. She just goes around and does stuff. She doesn't really have friends, and these are the group of friends she joins and becomes close friends with. She's fine as a protagonist, you know, to jump into the world with. Though my personal favorite is Nora. She's the most punk out of all of them. She's got like dyed pink bangs. She wears a lot of punk rock band t-shirts. She's sarcastic and funny, so like I immediately gravitated to her as playing the game. You know, it's interesting because again, last time I checked, I've never been a woman in my life, as you could tell by the voice, though my voice is a little higher pitched, I guess, when I'm not having throat issues. At least that's what I've heard from repeated telemarketers and people who I've had to speak over the phone with, but that's neither here nor there. Back to the discussion here about Bloom and Rage. Yeah, it gets the 90s vibe down. I like that. I like the you take your time with it. I like that you have to go around and find things to further get a grasp on what's going on, because you're getting bits and pieces of what's happening in current day. When I say current day, it's probably 2022, right after the pandemic, whatnot. As the older girls meet back up to figure out what happened in 95, because again, they don't remember. That's why I said it's like kind of like it. You're not gonna get everything at once. Like, you gotta find things with your camcorder. And I had to go back a couple of times because, you know, I was mainly at first playing the story beats, or like what I thought was pertinent to that, and then later on going back and getting the other things that enhance what's happening or gives you a little further clues. I love the mystery surrounding this whole thing. And it's, I want to talk about it. So if you decide that you want to play the game, I'm gonna do a little sound effect. I'm gonna count down and then give it a sound effect, and then I'm gonna get into spoiler talk. If you don't want to hear that, jump to the time code that I have in the description for the episode to listen to the last bit before I sign off. So I'm going to count that down in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, straight out of the gate, the episode ends with a big bang. Kat has leukemia, and she's been hiding it from the girls. It's part of the reason why Dylan and Corey have been so hostile with her when she's been out, and why they feel like she needs to listen to them. She's hasn't been doing treatment. She's been ignoring people, at least her parents and her sister, and she feels like she's being caged in and not being treated fairly. And the girls, her friends, Bloom and Rage, is an outlet for her to feel like a kid and, to have something different. On top of that, though, before all that, towards the middle of the game, the girls go out in the woods to shoot a music video, and the next day we see them watching it and like they're enjoying it. But then what they thought was the end of the music video, the tape comes back, starts playing again, and starts showing footage of stuff that they do not remember. It's dark in the woods. They don't know what's going on. The lights went out, and like you see this wavy, glowing blue, purple, pinkish color like filling the room and covering the TV and like them and freaking them out. And then we, play on, and they find this cabin out in the middle of the woods that they'd never seen before. Don't know how it got there. Don't know how they found it. But they end up taking it as a clubhouse of sorts. Now, after that, Kat wants them to make three wishes. She wrote a song. That's what they call it's called Go to Hell. And that song is actually a witch's incantation, in a sense. They use that as a way to cause a spell, right? And it seems like the song is directed at, Corey, her sister Dylan, maybe even her parents. It just shows a lot of rage and how she wants to take control, right? So that was neat. Well, come to find out later on, that spot where she wrote the song, they made a blood pact. At least three of the girls did. Autumn refused to do it. You find out in current day that the reason she didn't do it is because her brother died of AIDS and she didn't want to, a blood oath. And they took they sliced a part of their index finger and then they, touched the tips of it and, blood pact. So that's, I understand that wholeheartedly, but they each wish for something different, right? And you're left to wonder, did it come true? Or is it just circumstances? One of those circumstances being that Kat wants to win a poetry competition, and the winner gets four tickets for a concert. And she ends up winning it, so happens. So it's like, all right, did she really win it? Did her wish come true? Is that the goal? What's going on here? You're left with a lot of mystery. You don't get a whole lot of answers. You get a lot of setup. It's so tense. So I called it the Blair Witch Project, because when you're in the woods trying to find the cabin and walking around to find what they call the abyss, it's like this big old huge pit, and it's like got the blue, purple, green, wavy, glowy thing, almost like Chronicle, I think. If you ever seen Chronicle, when the guys get before the guys get their powers, they go into the cave and they find these like glowing crystals or rocks, whatever. It's kind of felt like that for me, because I love Chronicle. It's a great movie, but it does fit that eerie sci-fi Stephen King like vibe, or like something otherworld. Is it otherworldly? Is it aliens? There's a lot of books around where this guy named Fred claims that he was taken by the Greys. And, it's teetering on like that. Either it's supernatural, or is it aliens and it's some sort of alien device or something or another? I don't, you don't know. I don't know. That's one of the fun things about it. I know one of the theories that I saw, though, about this is that now when I was playing the game and walking around the woods and in certain parts, I thought maybe the game was glitching. Right, because I saw a shadow. Well, it turns out, or so it seems, that those shadows were intentional. And it could be a number of things. One, it could be people who have previously made wishes in that abyss, and they're in some sort of otherworldly realm and they can somehow peek through to our world in the shadows. It could be the girls who are doing like some sort of time travel, time loop thingy where like they can see what's going on in the past, but you know, all they are is like a shadow. It could be a number of things. But the reason they go back to Velvet Cove is because Autumn's mom got a package and it was addressed to Bloom and Rage, and there's a bunch of swirls around the package. You see that a lot in other parts of the game, like at Movie Palace, the couple of benches have swirls on it. There's a part in some desolate old abandoned playground area with like it's a lot of swirls and circles and such. And it's all over this box. And on the side of the box, it says, "I remember. I remember 1995. Do you remember me? I remember you," type like all these kind of messages. So, one theory to that is that it could be a fifth girl that we have not met because, you know, whatever the dreams happened or the wishes happened, and it's taken a piece of the group, possibly. Another theory is that it is Kat. And we don't know where Kat is in modern day, you know, because at the end of the episode, she's got leukemia. And, you know, is she dead? Is she still alive? Is she something otherworldly? You know, who knows? That's an interesting thing. Another theory that I saw floating around is that it could be Dylan who have sent the package, or possibly Corey. But though some people think, speculate Gus, the bartender, because we meet Autumn at a bar at the beginning of the game. A lot of people think Gus is actually Corey, just older and changed his name for whatever reason. Also, there's an interesting thing where this woman named Patty shows up to the bar and starts asking Swan questions about why she's there. Does she ever see anything strange? Because, oh, she's a paranormal expert. So, you know, she's asking those questions and like, why is this random lady asking? So it's interesting to think if maybe this Pam lady knows whatever happened in 1995 and the girls just don't remember her or not. That's the thing. I love that. And there's a little Easter eggs possibly sprinkled out the game. Like, I've been looking through books and such within Swan's room to see if like maybe I can figure out what could possibly mean next and how. If any of those things could tell me what the big mystery is, because there's a piece of fan fiction in Swan's little secret cubby thing where like it's clearly a spoof on the X-Files, the character of Scully. And but the character sees herself essentially as somebody else or another entity, and she wants to merge with that entity. Now, could that be foreshadowing of what could possibly be going on with the Abyss or not? I'm not quite sure. But that's the fun of this all, man. I love this game for that, 'cause like I played it once through just for the narrative perspective. I looked around the camcorder for certain things just to, you know, get it. But second time around, as I finished the tape one, I decided to go back and replay it. And just see, pay more attention to a lot of the surroundings and reminiscing moments to see if there's any clues to what could be happening. There was one glimpse of somebody at the very beginning of the game, and what looks to be a wolf's mask with blood on it. Now, could it be Corey playing a prank on the girls? Is he part of some sort of cult? Is it again another character who's been watching them and something bad about him? We know something bad's gonna happen in tape two. That is the reason why the girls drift apart and never speak until the package shows up. We know that for a fact, that something bad is gonna happen. Trailers indicated for the game, like there's gonna be a fire at some point. It could have been the girls started the fire because, you know, Kat resents her dad for what he does and how he kills animals, deer specifically, on his farm. Could she have burned that down, and could she have died there? Could have something happened within the fire? Like, could the girls have accidentally murdered somebody in that fire, or have in some way that the reason they decided to split apart? But, you know, it's interesting again with their wishes they made, you know, depending on which option you choose, you know, Swan could be either choose freedom or to be strong enough to protect the girls from whatever comes. And those wishes are interesting because Autumn didn't make a wish. She said she wanted to see what this thing's intentions were before she trusts it. Nora said she wants to be famous, like rock star famous. In present day, she's not a musician. She is a famous fashion designer. Kat's wish was that she wanted to get out of there. So that's why, I guess, or it alludes to the fact that the reason she won the competition to get four tickets for a concert to them getting out of the Velvet Cove. Another interesting thing looking back at it, when she's looking into the abyss and says, "I'm fucking dying. I need to get out of here. We need to get out of here." It feels like an interesting bit of foreshadowing to me now, or ominous thing, knowing that she has leukemia and that none of the other girls know, and that this is her way to possibly, defeat death and not die of cancer. A lot of interesting stuff, man. This game, man. This game is really good. I love this mystery. Again, I love going around in each level and trying to find different things, especially in the bar. We're talking to Autumn. It's Swan and Autumn in the beginning, and then eventually Nora shows up, and we don't know. Again, we don't know if Cat's alive or dead or not. Maybe she's the one who sent the package, maybe not. But none of the girls speak about her in the present tense, and maybe they don't remember if she's alive or not. I'm not necessarily sure. Maybe that's not. Maybe I'm reading too far into that. Maybe I've gone down too far the skeptic rabbit hole there. But an interesting thing, too, that I found in Swan's room, her book, like about, eye manipulation, like little images that distort, and you see different things. The quote on it is a modified quote that says, "If you gaze long enough into the abyss gazes back into you." Now, again, that could also allude to the X-File story that she wrote, where the person merges with one, the Dust Sisters, maybe a doppelganger of them is involved in this kind of like us situation. Jordan Peele movie, great movie, by the way. That's neither here nor there, but a lot of mystery here, a lot of possibilities, and I am so stoked for Tape 2 Rage to come out so I can figure out what this mystery is and how it all unfolds and what's what. Because again, like the game starts slow, you just do the mundane stuff, which I enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching the girls come together, become good friends, and then create this strong bond. Swan's moving at the end of summer, and like these are her only friends. And she's spending all this time with them, and they're developing these tight-knit bonds. And the girls said they're going to be friends forever. Nothing's going to drive them apart. And even part of Nora's wish is that she wants to keep the group together no matter what. So, a lot of interesting things, man. A lot of interesting things about what could be going on that we don't have answers to yet, and that I'm sure we're gonna get answered pretty quickly in Tape 2. So, that's it with my spoiler talk for Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. So now, before we cap off the show, I said it was the main event, but before we cap off the show, there's been word that the Batman 2 is being written right now. They've kind of alluded to the fact that Matt Reeves isn't too far into it. They're still developing the idea, but Robert Pattinson says he knows the story for the Batman 2. And a lot of other people know what's going on, so like the process is further along than what they are telling everybody. I just want the Batman 2, man. The Batman was such a great film. Robert Pattinson, is a pretty damn good Bruce Wayne and shows that tortured side of him. I'm thoroughly hoping that we get more of the facade of Bruce Wayne, the billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne. He's been a recluse in the Batman. So how's that gonna work out for you in, this story, and who they're gonna go. Are they gonna go with Clayface? Are they gonna try to, tone down Clayface and make him gritty, or not gritty, grounded and realistic into this world. I don't know. It'll be interesting. There's other rumors that it'll be Hush. As long as it's not the Joker. I don't want the Joker as a main villain in this Matt Reeves Batman universe. I don't want him anywhere near this Batman. I'm sick of the Joker in media. Like, you could be, I don't know, maybe let him be a side character. We could mention him. Maybe he can show up in a brief cameo, blink or a blink and you miss it type of thing. I don't know. Just there's plenty of other famous or interesting rogues in the gallery for you to choose from as far as the Batman face. Man, I don't know. Give me Deathstroke for Christ's sake. Give me the Mad Hatter. I don't know. Give me anybody but the Joker. Let's lay off the Joker for this, please. Pretty please. With the cherry on top. No Joker. Hashtag no Joker. Well, anyways, that's about does it for this week. You can find me at the JC Vega on all social media platforms. You can follow Vegas World Pod on Instagram. You can email us at vegasworldpodcast@gmail.com with questions, recommendations for reviews, or feedback, or whatever you want, I guess. Just as long as it be nice. If it's rude, I'm just gonna delete it. I'm not even gonna bother mentioning it on the show. But it's out there for you. Or comment on Instagram, whatever. But next week will be the Double Dragon Watch Along, the Dubetny Five, as we are called. Aaron Nova, Kata Green, and myself will watch the cult classic film starring Mark Dacascos, Scott Wolf, Robert Patrick. It's fun. It's so stupid. It's so fun. Alyssa Milano. I forgot to mention Alyssa. How could I forget Alyssa Milano? But it's gonna be fun. After that, we're gonna have Spooky Pookie Theater with myself and Kaden Green as we watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then there's gonna be another episode of Spooky Pookie Theater where we watch The Craft. A lot of fun stuff coming up. I hope you guys join us for that. I hope you enjoyed today's episode as much as you could. Give me props at least for soldiering through this. I was debating on whether or not I was gonna do the show or not because of this voice, but I got enough to talk, so it's gonna be done, man. We ain't missing. There are some weeks where I miss, but not. We're gonna soldier on and try to be consistent with our releases. Come hell or high water, throat or no throat. Well, I mean, I need to be able to speak and communicate. Otherwise, it'd be an awkward podcast, just me trying to utter sounds. Nonetheless, thank you for tuning in. Party on. Good morning. Good evening. Good night.